Hello. You thought I would never be back. I wondered if I would ever be back. I am back. Welcome back to Blue Eyes Crying by the Chips. It's me, Nico, your host. Haven't been here in a while. Took some time off, did some writing, worked on some other stuff. Now I am back with the first episode of this new season that's going to release a little randomly, just because I'm working on stuff I can't really tell you about right now, but I'm working on a lot of stuff. And so what I'm going to do is make the show as often as possible. In some weeks it might not happen, but I'm going to do my best. I'm making promises here. I'm writing checks that my entire body of work can never cash. But I'm hoping to continue making more. But I really wanted to get this first episode out, largely because there's a new record out today. The day you're listening to this, if you listen to it the day it comes out, which is going to be Friday, April the 12th, and that is Aaron West and the Roaring Twenties in lieu of Flowers. Aaron West and the Roaring Twenties being a side project of Dan Campbell of the Wonder Years. And I was really excited to do this. Dan and I recorded this a little while ago, and I was sort of waiting until I had some other episodes recorded, giving you guys a lot of like background on stuff you probably don't care about. But I wanted to get this out for the release of this record, which is really lovely. And Dan and I talk a lot about that and the Aaron West project. I, of course, naturally try to start a business with him almost immediately. And one thing to note about the audio quality, we were intending to both of us record our signs, and that wasn't working. So we just took the audio straight from Zoom. So it sounds a bit choppy in times, but it's fine. You're not going to listen to this on a hi-fi system. You're listening to this on your phone. And it sounds as good as a podcast that I recorded in my living room will sound on your phone. But apologies if it's a bit choppy in times. I did my best. And sometimes my best is simply not good enough. So excited to be back. Just because I'm thinking about it, because I'm about to say thank you to the people that, you know, do the stuff on the other side of this. We went to see Gladdy, who wrote the theme song for this podcast play here in Toronto a couple of weeks ago. They're on tour with Jeff Rosenstock, and seeing Gladdy live was incredible. Best band, best theme song. Augusta told me after the show that she was like, we almost played the theme song at the show, but we hadn't worked out how to actually do it. So my goal is one day to hear the theme song for this show, which I almost keep doing the show just because I think the theme song is so good. And Augusta and I are also making plans for how we might do something fun with the theme song this year as well. Enough rambling. Let's get into the episode. Again, theme song by Augusta from Gladdy. Our logo is by Amanda Wong. You can find links to all their stuff in the show notes for this. Let's get into it. My chat with Dan Campbell / Aaron West on Blue Eyes Crying by the Chips.
Most people want a hit. They want a song so they can move around and dance to it. But I want one that will cut me to my core. Leave me one more. I'm crying in the grocery store.
And I'll hit okay. And then let me see if it's still an option. The entire option bar is gone. Oh wait, there it is. No, I can't record this.
That's okay. We got this far. We've got our voices. It's all that's really needed. We're not like, I'm not a fancy podcast. I'm like very fly by night. I'm like an airplane that doesn't allow you to bring a bag.
I just took one of those. Okay. So you were allowed on a Frontier flight, if you don't pay for anything, you are allowed, quote, a child-sized backpack. So I literally brought my child's backpack on the plane to be like, you can't say shit to me.
Is the, like, as in backpack for a child or backpack the size of a child?
That's a great distinction that they should have to make, but is a backpack that a child would bring to school. So, like, not, I think what they're trying to do is say, like, don't think you found a loophole by bringing your giant camping backpack and being like, it's my personal item.
Sure. Yeah. This is, I get one phone call and this is, it's just 4 hours long. This, yeah.
They are very serious about it. And they like, if you have a bag that looks big, they make you put it in the thing to test it. And I was just watching like a bunch of guys just like punching their bag into this thing and be like, look at this. And like one couldn't get it back out.
Oh my God. They should send you like a bag. Like you, when you buy that ticket, they're like, okay, we send you a bag in the mail and whatever you can put in that bag, that's what you're allowed to take on the plane.
It's just like a bathroom sized trash bag. Just a little tiny.
Yeah.
It's you, a, you can count it on like it's a like a bag of like jewels in a cartoon. Little sack.
It's one of those cloth bags with a dollar sign on it that like Scrooge McDuck has in a in a vault somewhere.
Or like you're only allowed to bring like a handkerchief wrapped up and tied to a stick that like a cartoon like vagabond has. And then when you get to the plane, they have a big place for you to deposit the stick and you have to hold your handkerchief.
Please deposit your sticks before boarding the airplane. I think we've got a really good idea here. Like, it's so funny that this happened because like a running theme throughout the very short run of this podcast so far is that every time I have a guest on, I inevitably try to start a business with them. Like within the first 5 to 10 minutes, I start developing business ideas. And I feel like if you want to go halfsies on an airline, I think we've really got the makings of something great here.
And the capital for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Between the two. Can I say that I think this is my big airline idea here is that if you basically took a row of three seats, right?
Yeah.
Is like basically long enough to lay down on. And instead of having it be three seats, it is three of those like Japanese style, like cube hotels. That's just like a coffin. Sure. And you can just kind of climb into your coffin and go to sleep. And you just sleep in three bunk beds. And that's for any like Pan Pacific flight.
Yeah.
You should just get a little tiny cubby and you just wiggle your body down into it. And there's a little place to put your tablet on the wall.
Yeah.
And you go.
How tall are you?
I am 5'8".
Yeah, that's the thing that a 5'8" person would say about climbing into a small space. I don't want to call you out for your height privilege. I don't know what the right framing on that is.
But you know, it's different ways. There are times where my height comes in handy. One of them is on an airplane.
Yeah.
There are times. Does not come in handy, and it's when I want a glass out of my cabinet.
Yeah, see, that's where being over 6 foot, that's when the chickens come home to roost. All of a sudden, nothing is unavailable to me.
There's enough room. I think there would be enough room to, you know, that you could like kind of bend your knees.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and there is something to be said for like a sleeping in like a bent up position. Like, I don't always like to be straight out. I'm like 6'2", and I don't like to be stretched out like a cat in the sun. Sometimes I do want to like curl up into it. Like I like to make myself comfortable. There is something to be said for that. I'll fly your airplane once at least to try it out.
I have a lot of trouble falling asleep unless I'm laying. Like I'm not a good sit sleeper.
Sure.
And so I actually have no problem falling asleep on airplanes. Like I'm making it sound like this is a huge deal for me. It is not. I trained after years and years of touring, I am asleep before takeoff and I often have to be woken up and hear like, sir, everyone else is deplaned. Very, very common for me to do that and to do it stone cold sober. This is not like taking like a Z-Quil first. I'm just out, baby.
We've been in Chicago for a day. You need to get off the plane.
My brain has like this thing where it's like at night, like you would, most anxious people I think have trouble sleeping.
Yeah.
I'm a very anxious person. And when I get to my bed, my brain says enough of reality. Let's just shut this down. It's a gift.
I have been like this recently. Like now that I have like my medication, I think dialed in really nicely. Like as soon as I get into bed, I have all these grand ideas of like, I'm going to do stuff once I'm in here. Cause we're like, we have like the Food Network on and I'm like, I'm going to read a book or I'm going to play a video game on the Nintendo Switch or something like that. And it's like, I'm in bed and within 10 minutes, I am like, I couldn't be more asleep.
Yeah. 10 minutes. Is generous for me. The only way that I'm able to measure this time is like on tour, I'll sometimes put music on to go to sleep just because like you can still hear people hanging out in the front lounge and just I generally don't remember ever hearing the second song on an album.
Wow. Okay. Do you have a, like, do you have an album specifically that you're like, this is the record I put on if I'm trying to go to sleep?
No, it'll be just something kind of like mellow that I'm like yesterday on the airplane. It was, the new, Samia record.
Sure. Honey. Yeah.
Samia. I never say it right.
I'm like,
it's a very good record. It actually has like my favorite side one, track one of the past few years.
Really? Okay. Interesting. I haven't heard it yet.
It's very good. Kill Her Freak Out is an unbelievable song.
Okay. It's on my like long list of things to listen to that gets longer by the day when I realize that there's not enough time to listen to new things anymore.
I know, especially full albums. But if you want to give that song a spin, it's great.
Okay. Well, now you've touched on music. So I'm like, I'm going to seamlessly transition into I should have asked you this before we start recording. Maybe I'll just trim this part out, but I'm hoping that
where our business ideas are.
It's only I actually only release the business ideas part. It's like Shark Tank. It's like a very bespoke Shark Tank where none of us have any money, but we've got a lot of really good ideas and like fundamentals. It's like college basketball.
Perfect.
It's not as good, but it's there.
Not with NIL, man. People are getting paid now. It rules.
See, the whole world is changing for the better.
We should talk about music. That's our job.
I mean, I'm down to talk about whatever, honestly. But so, you know, the basic core, the core of this podcast is A, talking about crying, and B, talking about songs that we have cried to, like in public being a generous idea of like a place where other people have seen you.
Yeah.
And I'm in a unique opportunity. I think this is the first time where I'm talking to someone who has written something that I have cried to, that somebody else has seen me crying while listening to it.
Wow. I'm touched.
Spending Money at the End of the World, which I'm very bad with, like my brain is destroyed and I'm always like worried that I've misremembered titles, but that's the title of the song.
It's very close. Paying Bills at the End of the World.
Yes. I was so close. I knew money was involved.
I do the same shit. I do it all the time.
I love that song, and I was listening to it walking the dog, and normally I walk my dog very early in the morning. Normally nobody else is around, and I was like around the corner and somebody was walking up, and I was like just like getting misty in the morning, and this person just sort of walked by me and gave me the like sideways look when somebody walks by you when they know that like you look like you're going through some shit and they can't tell if it's just early in the morning or if you're like legitimately sad. And I wasn't like crying for any like particular reason. It's just a very beautiful song and it was early in the morning. So thank you for making me cry early in the morning. I appreciate it.
I have a very similar, like, especially because that song is kind of, so what's funny is that song is about like, for every Aaron West song I write, obviously it's narrative and it's narrative fiction. It's about Aaron West. But I always have to pull something from, you know, real life. I think that's kind of the basis of like good narrative fiction, is that there's some underlying truth. So it feels like alive and lived in. And that song, a lot of it is about walking around, walking my dog kind of early pandemic. And I was walking my dog George and heard Christian Lee Hudson's Lose This Number for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, I'm just crying in a field now. It's just what's happening.
Feel the tears. I mean,
yeah,
it's the sequel we all deserved.
I don't believe that anyone saw me, but there was like a game of like a distance game of children playing kickball in the field. So there's,
I mean, who hasn't cried in front of a bunch of other people playing kickball in their lives?
Yeah, a lot of children playing kickball in the middle of a pandemic.
I love that kickball is still a thing. Also, like, we've progressed so far beyond the need for kickball and still it prevails, and I love it.
Yeah, I would say that we have not progressed beyond the need for kickball, as it is one of the like food, water, shelter, kickball.
the big four, sure.
The big four.
Do your kids play kickball? Are they kickball players?
They are not yet old enough to have experienced it.
Sure.
Wyatt is about to turn 5.
Yeah.
And he plays, plays in air quotes here, like soccer. So they are just kind of learning the fundamentals of like how to keep the ball in front of you while you're running.
Sure.
He's starting T-ball soon, but his big love, he loves American football, like more than anything.
He loves the band American Football.
He cannot get enough of The One with the World, sir. He straight up, he wakes up in the morning, says good morning to me, sneaks downstairs and watches like old game footage on YouTube. Wow. Like that's what he does. He like, he knows like every American city because of their football team. Like he could like, my friend Alec is the assistant GM of the Eagles. Yeah. And so we got to go in, he got to sit in the meeting rooms and see the practice facility and, you know, the cafeteria and everything. And he's rattling off facts to the assistant GM, like that are like, do you know who plays center? And he goes, yeah, Jason Kelce plays center. He's number 62. And he was on the Cincinnati Bearcats in college. Just like,
wow.
The kid loves it.
That's, I love this. I love that. Like, I love when kids find the thing that they're like, this is the thing that I like. Let me tell you all about it. I have researched it extensively. Like, it's such an incredible thing that kids do.
If you meet him, one of the first things he will ask you is who your favorite football team is.
I better learn about how football works before I ever do, so I have something to counter that with.
Yours is like the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Are you from Saskatoon?
No, my partner is from Saskatchewan. I'm from the Yukon, and we don't get football up there. It's too cold.
Doesn't make it up. All right.
The balls freeze on the way up north.
I know that this is like, we're way off track here, but there was this this show called Football Town America, and it was Barrow, Alaska was the first season.
Wow.
And they were talking about how like, yeah, teams could only get there by flying. They can only get to other people by flying, and that they consider the weather their 13th man. And oftentimes they will kick the ball off and then a wind gust will blow it back to them and they'll retain possession just thanks to the wind.
So yeah, the wind is like their secret weapon. They just have to like, we only play into a headwind or whatever.
Yeah, like when they, with the coin flip, like we don't care who gets it first. We just want to kick into the wind.
They're just like holding their fingers up in the air before a game just to see how everything's going to go.
Okay, I'm sorry. I've gone way off track again.
That's okay. I mean, I'm rarely here to be on track, so I'm down for it. I distinctly remember I interviewed you for Spin last year, the year before, and was it last year that we did that call?
It would have been like 18 months ago.
It was 18 months ago, and we, before we ever got to the topic at hand, I think we invented like 4 dance pop bands, so I feel like this is par for the course.
Damn, you're right.
I wish I still had those. I had them, like, I wrote them down on a piece of paper and I like had them on my desk for like 6 months. And then I lost that paper because all paper, I think it was, loses.
One of them was Analog Lawnmower.
Yes, it was. Oh my God. I love that you just have that. Like, I've forgotten all these things. So you just got that front of mind.
You're wondering where my child's, just like, that's where it comes.
Sure.
You see the apple in the tree.
He likes American football, the sport, and you remember every fake indie pop dance band.
Every dance band I've ever been in, or theoretically been in.
So I have, before I get into the 4 core questions about crying, I have a question about Aaron West, which is, you've got a new Aaron West album coming out in April, early April, mid-April?
April 12th. So that depends on your definition of mid and early, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mid being what it is, I would say it's mid-ish.
Yeah.
Mid adjacent April. How hard is it to make that like in your head when you're writing to like, because you're inhabiting somebody, like you're inhabiting this character that you've created. Like, I feel like I'm like inside the actor studio. Like, is Aaron West here right now? Can he speak to us? But like, do you have to put yourself into such a different headspace to be able to sort of write these songs?
I do. I definitely do. So it's kind of, do you mind if I go like full tangent here?
Yeah, no, please do. Like, you tell me all about it.
Okay. So when I started the project, I had been I'm in another band. I'm in a band called The Wonder Years. And that's my main thing. And we had written this record called The Greatest Generation. I was very proud of it. But the writing process of it was really frustrating for me because I had a lot of ideas that I was having, like I was struggling to explain, and it was wasting a lot of time. And the reason for that is that I was so bad at guitar that it was like really hard for me to get things across. And they all got across, but I was like, this was inefficient. I should just be a grown-up and learn to play the guitar. And I have this tendency to learn best by just deciding to like do it. I can't sit there and read like a tablature book and be like, I'm going to learn these songs. I have to write songs.
Sure.
And so I said, I'm going to learn to play the guitar by writing songs with a guitar. But I was worried about cannibalizing my own like lyric pool.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it takes a long time to get enough good lyrics together to make a record. And so I was like, if I write songs about me, then I'm going to take my own ideas away. And then when we have to write a 1 year's record, I'll be good at guitar, but I will be useless lyrically.
Sure.
So I thought I'm going to write a record about a character, but the plan was never to make it. It was just to write it. And I showed the songs to my friend Ace, who was in a band called the Early November. And he was like, I think these songs are good. And I would actually like to produce this record. And so then I, you know, talked to our record label and said, I want to make this record and Ace wants to produce it. And also, side note, I promise I will learn to play guitar first. And they had enough trust in me to say, okay, do it. So I made the record. And I made the record in a character. And it came time to play some shows for it. And they were in this stage called the Acoustic Basement on the Warped Tour, with me, my first shows. And I, again, not very good at guitar. Every day for like months leading up to that, I would film myself playing the set so that I could watch that tape back and critique it and get better day over day. And I started to realize how weird it was to jump in and out of the character song to banter, right? Like to just play this like kind of very sad song about someone going through this like very difficult year and then be like, okay, who checked out the story so far over on the main stage earlier, right? It just didn't feel right to me.
Sure. Yeah.
So I decided I would inhabit the character fully while I'm playing the songs. And that was good. It was fun. And I never expected to play many shows, but I ended up playing many shows. And so then it came time to write the second record. And I realized that I had this built in, this like added challenge now that I am saying it's canon that Aaron is on stage playing songs for you. Right. So now canonically, Aaron is a musician and he goes on tour and he plays these songs, which limited the scope of what I could do with the character. It put me in a space where I was in Chicago on X day and I told a group of people, my name is Aaron West and I played them songs. And so on that same day, I cannot have this character hiking to Machu Picchu, right? Like we've established some things about him outside of the canon of the songs, but mm-hmm. in, you know, in the canon of the character. And so right in that next record, I had to take a lot of care to like pull out calendars and like write when I was in certain places and make sure everything lined up to keep, you know, narrative consistency. But I realized while doing that, that it offered me not a constriction, but an opportunity for this record,
sure.
which is that I could create these events or plan these events and then execute them on stage in front of a crowd and then write about them later. And so in that way, I like to say that the product is like the band comes out being a more similar as an art form to pro wrestling than anything else, because like what happens live on stage in front of an audience changed the course of the narrative moving forward. And I can't think of another thing that does that.
Yeah.
There's, you know, you can say, okay, well, it's a band. And it's like, well, yeah, it's a band, but it's a narrative and it's an ever evolving story. And then you could say, okay, well, is it like a musical? It's like, well, kind of, in that we are performing as characters and playing music on a stage, but we're not playing the same show the next night. We're changing the narrative as it moves forward.
Yeah.
And in that way, I think it can only be compared to pro wrestling.
When you started talking about it, I was like, this is your Nebraska moment, but it has, as you've been describing it, I'm like, it is like if Springsteen was like, I have written Nebraska, he's going to fight Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Atlantic City is actually about a steel cage match, and it's just couched in metaphor. So, yeah. So then, when I was writing this third record, it was kind of this push and pull of, I know the big beats of the narrative, and I spent some time talking to, like, I talked to Hanif about it. I talked to Holden about it. Just talking to, and you know, other people in other bands, and just trying to make sure that like all of the narrative structure is like logical extensions of who the character is, which is again like talking about inhabiting that character, like what would Aaron do facing X situation?
Sure.
And like, how does that, the like result of that change him as he moves forward? And then beyond that, we had to roll with like actual real life punches, right? Like, we didn't plan for there to be a pandemic, but there was one. And so if there is a pandemic, then Aaron experienced it too, because canonically he exists on this timeline at this time. You know, these are the years that he is, everything moves in actual, you know, I don't know, what is it? Earth time, celestial Earth time, whatever. You get it.
Median Earth time, they call it, I think. Yeah.
They call it Earth time.
Earth time. Your Earth time. And
I swear I'm a human. And so, yeah, everything, you know, and we had these like kind of things pop up. Like, we just put out this song Alone in St. Luke's, and I had the idea of Aaron's issues with alcoholism kind of showing themselves again once the band started touring again. Mm-hmm. But what actually happened was everyone on that tour but me got COVID. And so I had to finish it solo. And I was able to use what actually happened to like improve upon the quality of the narrative.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, I love this idea of this like character study as this kinetic thing that changes as the situation in reality. It's like a, you've like created this alternate timeline that still exists, like following the same beats that we're living through, like manifesting this person in the world that isn't really there, but is there, like, and is reacting to things in a way differently than you are, but also like kind of the same. If that make, does that make, is that?
I mean, there's, that's, I said, there's bits of me in there, right? Like, the line in Paying Bills at the End of the World about the sidewalk chalk, like, there's a church that if I turned the camera, you would see it right here, out this window, that was doing that. And, you know, that's where the inspiration comes from. So like, there is some me in it, but yeah, it's also reacting, you know, Aaron is a different person and reacts differently to the same events that I'm living through.
So it's not a thing where you have like a broader narrative sketched out ahead of time, where like you don't know how Aaron West ends, you know, like you don't know how Aaron West dies.
I don't. I know that how In Lieu of Flowers ends, because it had to have ended before the band recorded the record, or, you know, it's like the events have happened, right?
Sure.
The event at the end of the album In Lieu of Flowers take place in November of 2023. And I've been getting a lot of questions because I'm doing this release show. Wait, can I back up one real quick?
And then I promise it'll.
That I have been obsessed with like the way that media was consumed when I was like in like the 90s, where like if there was a series or a season finale and you wanted to watch it, it wasn't like now where you're like, well, it's up on streaming, and so I'll watch it when I watch it, and we'll talk about it when we've all seen it and whatever. It was like you had to be there on the couch at 7 o'clock where you missed it, and you would have to wait a week to see it or something.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was a lost thing that I loved. I don't know if it's important, but I loved it.
Sure.
And so I wanted to try to create it again with this album. And so we're releasing the singles, but the actual album will come out midnight Eastern time on April 12th, which is different than a normal album, which would come out midnight local time. And so people in Australia would have it first, and then Europe, and then eventually Eastern time. And the reason for that is we're going to play the entire story, like all of the most important beats of the story, over three albums and one EP on stage as a 15 piece band on April 11th. And at like 11 p.m. or so, we will play what is the finale, the end of the story as we currently know it. And it's live streamed. So you can watch it from anywhere in the world, and you can experience the ending at the same time as everyone else. And then an hour later, it will go on Spotify and Apple Music and everywhere else. But incredible. I say that to say, people ask a lot, thank you so much. I've been dreaming about it for literal years.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, tell people that, they're like, that seems like a lot of work for this one little idea, but like it's such an itch that I needed to scratch. But a lot of people have been asking like, oh, so is it the season finale or the series finale? Because I look at the project as TV.
Sure.
And every song is an episode and every album is a season. And the answer, you know, truthfully is always, I actually don't know, because it's usually about 5 years between Air and West records. Mm-hmm. And I've been referencing Stefan from Pup a lot. And you know, for the good of the world, he was able to continue singing, but there was a point in time where a doctor told him he wouldn't sing again. And I'm always worried that that's going to happen in my throat or any other thing could happen. Mm. And so I try to make sure that every record ends in a way where you can say, if that's the end, that's a nice logical conclusion for the character.
Sure. Like, I mean, also kind of the way the TV, I mean, TV still kind of is, but like in that time period that you're talking about, there was always that idea of like, I don't know if this thing is coming back. So I want to be able to watch it and feel resolved in some way.
I don't know if you watched it or liked it or hated it or whatever, but I loved that show Glow on Netflix.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The wrestling one. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Marc Maron, Alison Brie and Betty Gilpin. And it was, I love wrestling. So I loved that show. And it was supposed to have a fourth season, and the way the storyline they set up, I was so excited for it. And then it just got canceled. Yeah. They were just like, there's a pandemic and this show costs too much.
Yeah. I remember that being a whole thing of like, why is this the thing that we lose? Like this beautiful thing that the people that loved it loved so much.
Yeah. Like, do we need another NCIS? Like maybe we could finish Glow.
In a perfect world, we bring them both together. There's an NCIS, but it's just about professional wrestlers in the 1980s.
I love that too.
I love this commitment to that itch of like, this is what I want to do. I want people to experience this story the way that I'm telling it in this way. It's going to be broadcast at this specific time. Like, it is a thing that I think we have kind of lost in like the modern era of like, this is the way an album rollout goes, and this is the way the marketing works, and this is the way XYZ works. And like that, like beautiful moments that only existed that one piece of time. And then like, sure, you can revisit it digitally or whatever, but like there's that essence of being there that I think has sort of been whittled away by like the omnipresence of the internet, which like is a good thing for a lot of reasons, but also like we do kind of miss these magic moments. And like, I appreciate that you're like, this is how I want to do it, and this is how I'm going to do it. And sure, it might be a lot of effort, but the effort is worth it.
Yeah. I mean, if you talk to anybody who works probably in music on like the side that is like to make it fiscally possible, I think basically everything I do with this project, they're like, why? Because I'm like, it needs to have more members. Like, you know, we're going to the UK and we just are looking at the baggage fees alone. And we're like, oh my God, this tour is going to lose money. Like everything we do, I'm like, it needs, you know, that show's 15 members, but even when we go on tour with it, it's somewhere between 7 and 10, sure. Maybe 11. Like every single thing I do with it is like as extra as you could possibly be. And it's like, it's for me more than anything else. It's like, because I wanted to see it happen. And so like, you know, anyone would tell you like, this is not the way to roll out a record. Or this is not the way to roll out a single, or like you're even like losing the streams day one of not having it available in certain places until it later in the day. Like all that stuff is like counterintuitive to like successful like music rollouts. And I just like, I'm lucky to have a label and a manager and an agent and everybody that are like, if that's your vision, see it through.
It's nice to have that trust. Like, it's such a hard thing to have of like, I have an idea, and if you let me run with it, I promise it'll work out. You just have to let me do it. And like, I would imagine as a musician, that's a harder and harder thing to hold on to.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when I started the band, one of the things I told them was, I promise I'll learn to play guitar if you give me money to make a record. It's an insane thing to say yes to, right? But they did. So,
I mean, there's something to be said about like being able to play guitar just enough to service the songs that you're playing. Not to say that anybody is good or bad, or I don't know. I'm always such a bad. I think everybody that can play guitar is good at guitar. That's my like level of it.
I can tell you right now with full certainty, I am not. That there are, in the Roaring Twenties, I would say 6 to 8 better guitar players than me in the same band.
It's like a football team.
The entire horn section is significantly better at guitar than me. The drummer of Aaron West is the guitar player of the Wonder Years. The other guitar player is obviously better at guitar and Guitar Tech's Return style. The bass player is a better guitar player. Like, Ace plays banjo, 1,000,000% a better guitar player. Robin, who does harmonies, definitely a better guitar player.
Well, when I listen to it, I think you're a good guitar player. So take that. I mean, maybe my, like I said, my partner is a musician, so she knows better than me. But like, I think anybody that can play an instrument is like, I'm like in my 40s and still wowed by anybody that can do anything at all. And it's just like, oh, look how good they are. They're doing it.
I appreciate that. I think that part of my success is knowing to stay in my lane. Might just play the thing you can play.
I mean, which is like, you know, especially with this kind of songwriting, it's always kind of my favorite thing about it is like, I'm not like people that are less worried about like being a virtuoso and more like, what am I doing in service of the song or the story? Like, it's less about the, like, look how good I am at structure or chords or whatever. I clearly don't know guitar terms, but like, look at how I'm able to take these pieces and conjure them together into this thing that is like very emotionally resonant. Like, to me, that's more real than like whatever raw physical talent.
Well, and that's my love of the art form, right? I love music in a different way than a lot of other, usually more talented musicians love it. But like, what I've always loved about music is that you have, first, I've always loved the constriction, right? Like, hey, tell me a story in 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so like, in a lot of ways, like I love it the way that I love poetry, because like the economy of space is like kind of paramount in it. Like, we don't have forever. We don't have 200 pages or whatever. We have one.
Yeah.
But then the fact that we can then take the story and like literally score it like a film, and like, I get to choose how I'm delivering these words to you and what I put behind it, and like find ways to like heighten the emotional response that way, has always been like the most interesting thing about it to me.
Would you ever translate into other media, like taking Aaron West and being like, we're going to do a TV series or a movie or a graphic novel series or something like that?
Yeah. So I've always thought a graphic novel makes the most sense, just because I don't know who would, like, what studio would be like, yes, we will make this television for you. But I have recently been talking to my friend, Charlie, who is like, he does a lot of voiceover work for Netflix, but he's also a pretty accomplished actor. And he's getting more into writing and directing. And he was like, maybe we put something together and pitch it. And so like, we'll pitch it as a TV show. I think that there is a show there.
Sure.
But I go in with low expectations on basically thing. And yeah, sure. We'll see. But I do think that at the very least, eventually it could find its way into graphic novel form.
Love it. I mean, there's so like the imagery in the songs is so vivid. Like, thinking there's a line of like, my skin looks like, God, I'm so bad with stuff. And I'm like reciting your own lyrics to you and I'm going to fuck them up. But like, the skin looking like a
minefield, the mosquitoes got me bad.
Yeah. Like that line, like I heard it once and I was like, oh yeah. And then I heard it, the more I heard it, I was like, oh, like I was like peeling back the layers of what that, like what the image of that was telling me about this character. And I was just like, these little moments in songs that you all of a sudden learn like an entire world is so like vivid.
Yeah. It's a thing that I really believe in my songwriting, is like my ability to create visual and like world building in that way. And like, I think you hear it a lot on the last record, which is where I really started to focus on like where the light is. Like, if you listen to that song that there's, or that record, and then even into this one and into other things I do, but like, I try to like tell you what the room looks like. And a lot of that is like, what is the source of light in the room and how is it projecting onto us and what is it illuminating and that kind of thing. I think, you know, that so much of like shooting a movie is lighting it. So sure. Yeah.
You get the lighting down pat.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. So, to the spirit of the podcast, I have 4 questions. Question the first is, what is your relationship to crying?
Could you tell me how other people would answer that question? so that I can tell you, like, I feel like I just don't have like the scaffolding on which to put an answer.
Yeah, no, fair. You know, a lot of people a thing that I found really interesting over the course of doing this show with folks is people sort of taking me through the way that their relationship to crying has ebbed and flowed over their life. Like when they were younger, they did it a lot. And then maybe they had a family situation that made them feel like they had to sort of hide that part of themselves away. And, you know, the way that this sort of creates walls around our like own emotional resonance and whether and how we've learned to come back to it or maybe not. And like, I'm really interested in how people feel about it in this moment in their lives. Like, you know, when you, if you are a crier, like how and where do you let yourself do it? And who do you let see you do it?
I would say that I am typically like, I'm a tearer upper, mostly things. Like if I like watching people win, I like watching people succeed in the thing that they love to do. And so like, I will tear up at like basically any instance of that. My kid was watching Noah Kahan playing Red Rocks. And like, there's a moment where you can see him look at the crowd and be like, holy shit, I did this. And I'll get misty eyed at that.
Sure.
But as far as like weeping goes, I am a, like, it should have happened by now, right? Like something, you know, bad will happen in life and I will want to cry and not, and it just won't for a long time. And then a dam breaks and it's just like, you know, hours of it basically. There's like a little poem in the Sister Cities book where I say like, and fill my suitcase with tears and forget to pack a hoodie. And so I think of home every time I, you know, I'm cold. Yeah. But that is kind of like that. I remember we were getting ready to go on tour and my grandfather was like very sick and was like pretty clearly not going to make it, but there was no like particular timeline on that. And I remember just like weeping into my open suitcase. And that's kind of my crying. It's like a little misty eyed every once in a while. And then sometimes just like gallons.
Sure. Have you always approached it that way? Was there a time when you felt like you had like an easier access to like the full on crying part of it or?
I don't. I think that I've always kind of been like, I think maybe because it takes a quiet moment. Like, I think that my brain always like immediately goes into like functional mode. Like, how do I fix this or solve this or like kind of no matter the situation, like immediately I jump to like, solutions.
Yeah.
And so I think it maybe my brain gets too busy. And then like, sometimes it'll be a moment where I literally will like walk into the bathroom and like wash my hands and like look up at myself in the mirror and then just like, there it goes. You know, I just needed one quiet second to like ruminate on it.
Yeah.
I think as a child, I was definitely very prone to just like a weepy emotional breakdown, but in the way that like, I don't really know if that's fair because like, your brains aren't developed enough yet to like really say that that's like how you handle things so much as like, it's so easy for like a 4-year-old to be overwhelmed or like hyper-focus on like the importance of like one very silly little thing. Like I really need to wear this Ninja Turtle t-shirt today.
Yeah.
And the fact that I cannot is the end of the world. It's just a matter of being able to regulate your emotions.
Sure. I mean, I miss when that was a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. I just got a scam phone call that cut into that. Did that come up on your screen or like, did you hear the sound of it?
No, but I wish we could have taken it on the air and just like have someone offer to like come by and clean your air ducts or something. And then like, that's the big scam that was going around Toronto last year.
I was getting a lot of calls recently from a number that it looked so much like a scam because where it says what it is, it said literally prison/jail. And I was like, okay, so one of those things where they call and be like, there's a warrant for your arrest and like whatever. But I noticed like the pattern that they were calling in felt not like that. Mm-hmm. And so I Googled the number and it was like Chester County Correctional Facility. Mm. And I was like, oh, man, like maybe someone I know, you know, is like locked up and like needs me. And so I called back, but like, you can't call that number back. And so I called the general number and like they were like, we can't find out who called you, but if you ask, you know, I can check the roles for like any names. And so I gave them a couple of names, like none of those people are here. And I was like, oh, I guess it's probably a wrong number or something. And so, you know, I just stopped thinking about it. And then I got this text the other day that just said like, yo, Hakeem is waiting for you on like video chat. And I was like, wait a minute. Just like the way that it was phrased, I was like, is there a chance Hakeem is in Chester County? And they were like, yeah, they're waiting for you. And I was like, oh no. I was like, yo, tell Hakeem I'm so sorry, but they have the wrong number. And I felt like very guilty for days now, thinking that someone is calling and thinking they're being ignored by one of their loved ones. And that's not what's happening. And my name is Dan. And like, that's not who they're looking for. And I'm so, so sorry. And they're like, oh, that was really nice of you. I'll let them know. But that was my scam phone call story from the week. Wasn't a scam.
I love like a happy ending to it. Like it is a good resolution to like,
there was resolution. Yeah. Because I was, I kept thinking like, if this is real and someone in Chester County is calling someone that they love, who is not picking up over and over and over again, like they're going to start to feel abandoned and I don't want that to happen.
Sure.
But the one time I did pick up, cause I don't have an account, it just hung up on me.
I mean,
because calling from a prison is like a privatized for-profit thing.
Right. I always think of it as in the movies where you get like a thing where it's like, you've received a collect call from whatever corrections facility.
Well, we live in hell world. And so you get
inferred. Yeah, sure. I mean, similar in Canada, we just do everything with coins instead. Mm-hmm. That's weird.
That was a little nod to Luke O'Neill in hell world.
I, as an avid reader of Hellworld and the itemized lists of all my favorite saddest musicians in the world, I think most recently was the Jason Molina. I did a collection of people writing about Jason Molina songs. And speaking of songs that make people cry,
I need to read some of it.
Okay, my second question, and this is the one I give everybody an out on answering is, what was the last time you cried?
So the last time I cried is actually, so I've seen these questions before. And the last time I cried is actually kind of like part and parcel with the question about the last time a song made you cry in public, which is that our good friend and former tour manager and front of house engineer and the king of, you know, South Jersey punk and emo, Steve Paponi passed away on Halloween. And there was a memorial show and his band played Up, Up, Down, Down, played with different friends singing. And I tried so hard to find a place in the room where I wouldn't know anybody and like finally found a nice place to stand. And I watched like two songs and then the woman next to me turned and went, hey, are you the guy from The Wonder Years? And I was like, God damn it, I am. And then they played this song, Please Come to Me, which was always my favorite of Steve's. And I wept openly in public and then decided I needed to leave.
Right next to someone that had just like recognized you. Yes. And was like, hey, are you the guy?
Do you want to take a photo? I'm like, sure.
And the person knew that they were at a show that was like a memorial show for this person that had passed away?
Yes, but there wasn't like I'm making a joke of it, but it was not like a presumptuous, like, or like uncouth thing.
Sure. Yeah.
They just, which also happened, you know, 45 more times throughout that show. It just, that happened to be the time 90 seconds before I was weeping.
Is it hard to like, I mean, I don't know how it feels to be as recognizable as I'm sure you are in a lot of rooms, especially places and shows like that. Like, is it hard to be like, okay, I want to have a little bit of time because I want to be able to watch music and process what's going on. And I don't want to like hide backstage or whatever. Like, I want to be out in the crowd. So I just need to be like in my own space. Like, is that a hard thing for you to sort of hold on to?
The thing that gets me, well, first of all, I think one of the funny things is I feel like I'm not recognizable or should not be. I look like everyone. I am like emo guy 2 from the emo guy. Right? Like,
sure.
I'm about as stock as a motherfucker gets. So I'm always surprised when people know that it's me. But what does bother me is my feeling of guilt that I am detracting from the show. Mm. Like, I don't like when people, not that I don't like taking pictures of people, I'm so fine to do that, but I don't like that they've ceased paying attention to an artist that I'm friends with or just like love and went to see. Cause like now I'm a distraction at like their show. And I feel like guilt about that. And so I try to make myself scarce, the best that I can. But it does not always work.
I mean, you know, there's something to be said for like, it's less like, I mean, people are like fingerprints and snowflakes. Everybody looks, you know, different, but also like you're the front person of a band that is like, not only just like a lot of people love, like thousands upon thousands of people love your band a lot, but also like it means a lot to, but like your music means a lot to people. And I think when an artist, like, I think there's two kinds of artists in this world. Like, I think there's artists you're like, I like that band. And there's people that are like, this person has made something that means something to me for X, Y, Z reason. And it's not like, it's not so much the parasocial thing as it is like, this person has been able to speak to me in a way that another artist has not been able to speak to me. And so like, regardless of how a person looks, it's more like, they're the vision of the idea of them is imprinted on me because maybe I can see it when I listen to the song and I close my eyes, I can see them on a stage, or I can picture them, you know, with this music in them. And that is a thing I think just never goes away. Like there's a lot of artists who I don't know, but if I saw them, I'd be like, you're, you know, like John Darnielle doesn't look like any, like looks like a bunch of people. But if I saw John Darnielle, I'm like, that's John Darnielle.
Yeah, you're right. I did it. At wow, it's so funny. This comes right back to Riot Fest when I talk, but I did it to Craig Finn at a Riot Fest, and it's just there was no question in me that that was Craig Finn, and I was going to punish him. But also, he was backstage watching The Replacements, and so which I think is like true neutral position for Craig Finn is to be watching. It's like to be at Riot Fest watching The Replacements is like his natural of habitats. And so like, it's him.
It's like a Planet Earth. You can just hear sort of like, the wild Craig Finn watches The Replacements carefully from the reeds, careful not to interfere with our habitat.
Yeah. And so, that's why I'm saying like, I really don't mind meeting people, talking to people, taking pictures of people. Like it really, if anything, I feel like a gratitude for it because like, how lucky am I to have made something useful in other people's lives?
Sure.
To have been able to turn, you know, my private ailing into like a tool that can be useful to solve other people's is like truly a wonderful thing. And like, I really feel mostly gracious, but I, at shows specifically, I feel like a distraction, which I don't like to.
Especially at a show like that, then maybe isn't like, I said the word memorial show and that's, and I'm framing it wrong, but like this idea of like, we're here and like in memory of this, I'm sorry to hear.
Celebration of Steve. And it was like, they did two nights and like Hopalong and Alex G and a bunch of amazing bands played, Great Big Pile of Leaves. And and it's all bands Steve has worked with. And he owns a studio, in my town, like a mile away that I'm at all the time. And just, the kind of guy that like really an entire scene doesn't exist without him. Like he was the foundation of so much of what came out of like South Jersey and Philadelphia for like years and years. And like one of those like maybe like unheralded heroes of it. But I don't know if you saw Evan Weiss posting about it, but like, you know, it's true. There would be no Intuit Over It, no Pet Sim, no there, like, none of that shit is without Steve and without Down and without Gradwell House. And, you know, we were very lucky to have him touring with us for a period of time and kind of just a guy that is missed by everyone.
Yeah. I saw a few people, first of all, it's one of those things where like, it's a person I don't know, but I see a lot of people that exist in a scene or in a city posting about it. And you like, it is an interesting it's one of the weird things of like, as much as I'm sometimes wary and afraid of like the modern state of the internet, I do think that there's something to be said about this, like, oh, I'm getting an idea of this person that clearly was like important and meant a lot to people that I like or that I know or that whatever. And I don't know this person, but I'm getting a sense of their life and impact. And it's like this sort of very public record of like, here's this person that mattered a lot to these people in this place. Yeah. And here's a celebration of them.
And absolutely the person, you know, very deserving of that.
Yeah. I'm assuming we have moved through the tell me about a song that has made you cry in public. Is there something about that song in particular that you're like, this is why it gets to me?
I think it's just a beautiful song. It's one of my favorite music videos of all time too. And very worth a watch, but it's short and it's basically just all these big heavy downbeats with like one kind of like long looping lead and melody singing over it.
Yeah.
So the music video starts and you see the band and you see Steve take a big breath to sing the first lyric. And then by the time he hits the word please, it's cut to a scene of fireworks, and every downbeat, a new firework explodes in the air. And like they had timed up the video to it. And then at the very end of the video, it cuts back to the band and they're just ringing out. And so you don't see them playing any music. The shot of the band is probably in total 1 second across the music video.
That's incredible. And
it's like a really, really beautiful video. And I always just thought it was like one of the most beautiful songs. And the one that kind of first introduced me to the band, and one that I punished Steve about when he was on tour with us about writing. And so that was just the one that got me.
How did it feel to be like processing all of that in that moment and like having that cry in this public space? Like, is there a catharsis that follows that?
No, I mean, I had the cathartic moments. Like I said, I live within walking distance in the studio. And sure. So there was a small memorial at the studio. And then I walked home in like the cold through all these Christmas lights and thought about our friend Tom had told me about a dream he had about it right before I left. And like, that was my like cathartic cry. Mm-hmm. This was my like almost embarrassed cry, because like people were like, knew who I was in the room. And so now I'm like a pseudo public figure in this room, like weeping. It's like, oh man, this is going to be on the internet later.
There's just TikToks of you crying at a show.
I was like, I gotta get out of this space. I gotta go hide somewhere.
I mean, there's this humanizing element to it where you're like, hey, if he's crying, we're all crying. Like, saddle up, partner. We're all in.
Yeah. But I really didn't want to. I wanted it to be the celebratory event that I think we were all hoping for. And it was like, there's like a video of Steve doing a thing he would do sometimes, which is stage diving with a piece of pizza. And his young Clara did it at the end of the show, and just some really cool shit. It's a really cool memorial.
That's beautiful.
There's a place called Stu Leonard's. It's, I don't know, for lack of a better word, it's a grocery store, but it's a really cool one.
Sure.
And he was obsessed with it to the point where, like, if you were touring through that area with him, you had to go. Like, it would be like, hey, we're running an hour behind. It doesn't matter. And so they made these shirts that are the logo, but it says Steve Leonard, and it had him milking the cow. And it's like, I don't know, cool tributes.
I'm sorry to hear about, your loss, a lot of people's loss. I love a beautiful tribute to somebody like that who just had an impact in so many people's lives. I mean, it's just, what a beautiful way to exist in the world where like so many people want to gather to remember you when you go. Like, that's the dream for everybody, I feel like, right?
There's a thing that said that's probably true, which is if you are a band of a certain size that played Philadelphia, there's almost a 100% chance that one of those shows Steve did sound for you and heckled the absolute shit out of you. You did this really biting sense of humor. And so they made these hats that said suck less, thanks. which was just like very him. You never knew when he was joking. It was really wry and I don't know, great guy. But that was the last time I cried in public in the song that I cried to. And then like I said, a different time would have been the first time I heard Lose His Number by Christian Lee Hudson in the middle of a pandemic, and that was a good public weep as well.
I had the most embarrassing cry in the midst of the pandemic when I had to go get my driver's license done with my, when I had changed my name and I was having this really frustrating time getting my driver's license changed. Of all the really annoying things about being trans, oddly enough, changing your driver's license is like such a terrible nightmare. And I was walking down to where it was off the subway and I was listening to Jimmy Eat World, like Bleed American, and the song about the two kids that ran that fan club that died in the car accident, Michael and Carly or whatever, you know, it's Hear You Me. The song is Hear You Me. Yeah.
May angels lead you in, hear you, my friends. Yeah.
So I'm listening to that and I'm walking through like downtown Toronto amongst all these high rises, but the street is empty and normally it's like quite busy where I was. And it's like the reality of the situation around us was like really hitting me. And I started crying and I was walking, listening to Hear You Me. And I was like, this album came out 20 years ago. Why is this doing this to me now?
I know. There are two songs that I was tearing up to. So this week I went and worked on some songs with this band Future Teens from Boston.
Yeah.
And there are two different songs on there that for two different reasons, I was like tearing up, like listening to what we had recorded on like the way home. It's tough because I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
But maybe we can cut it out of the podcast. I'll tell you on air that there is a phenomenal group of songs.
Okay, one last question about crying in music. Just as a thing I thought about, I didn't prepare anybody for it, and I apologize, I'm throwing this question at you. But like thinking of like this, like sometimes I want to like have a big cry and I can't. Like, is there a song that you can listen to and you're like, I need to have a cry. I'm going to listen to X and it's going to do it for me. Like, is there a song that you can still cry to even though you know it really well?
I would say it's probably This Year. I think it's probably a lot of people's answer. And I did it, man, just straight up by accident. The one year I thought that I would do a live stream on election day in 2020. I was like, I'm going to do a live stream and it will like to keep people company when they were waiting in line to vote. I was like, I'll do this thing. And I played This Year at the end of it and I couldn't finish the song. And I mean, it totally took me off guard. Like, I did not expect to cry. But there is something, there's a podcast I listen to that John does an interview on. Man, we talked a lot about John.
I know there's a lot of John. It's funny because I was going to ask you something about a John Sampson thing, about a Weaker Dance thing specifically, but we went on a John Darnielle tangent instead.
I would always love to talk about the Weaker Dance. I finally figured out what the name for my eventual Weaker Dance tribute comp is going to be called once I find out it, but, which is the best parts of Lonely. But anyway, that's a great name for a comp.
Yes. I want to figure out how to be a part of this somehow.
But yeah, it was like, you know, he said, we asked people what songs they listen to help them when they're depressed. And a lot of people answered your songs. And they said, one of the most common answers was Amy, AKA Spent Gladiator. And they play a little bit of song. And then he goes, do you know what the other one is? And before he finishes saying it, John goes, it's This Year. And he said, it'll be the song I'm remembered for. And he is correct.
I mean, This Year is such a good, This Year does it for me. And also, I think it's Dost Thou Remember the Tetrapod, the line of like, and alone in my room, I am the
last of a lost civilization.
One gets me every time.
Yeah, there's a lot of that song. Spittle bubbling off your lips, fine white foam. I am young and I am good. That the line "I am young and I am good" really got
yes.
me. And but now I'm awake and I'm guarding my face, hoping you don't break my stereo because it's the one thing that I couldn't live without. And so I think about that and then I kind of pass out. What a fucking line! What a writer.
Nobody else could pull that. Like, there's very few people because it's such a run-on sentence, and it's really hard to think of it like that line working as a song. And there's like, he makes it work so masterfully. And
and then John Sampson, another one, John Sampson, one of the best lyricists I've had the privilege of listening to in my lifetime.
I'm just going to keep you on the line for a couple hours. I'm just going to ask you all the songs that make you cry by all these people that I also like. What's your Weaker Than It's Cry song? Like, in my head, I know the one, but like, I want to know.
I would say there's a lot on Left and Leaving.
The title song is such a good one for that.
I know. And there's the line, I forget what song it's in. This guy tries on its uniform of turned off TV gray.
Yeah.
We watch the ways you watch us walk away. I don't know. Even like the fun lyrics, but I think one of my favorite little lyrics in that record is how I don't know what to do with my hands when I talk to you and you don't know where to look. So you look at my hands. I always thought was a really wonderful lyric. I think the line, it's on Reconstruction Site.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to forget it. But just where it's like, what's the idea is like, and give my grief away. It never got me anything. It never sent a get well card.
One of the Virtute pieces, one of the Virtute songs.
Is that in there? Hold on. I'm gonna find it. Obviously the bridge of the I know you're strong.
I can't remember the words that you found for me. Like I can barely say that sentence. Yeah. I wrote an essay. I read a thing for the Vancouver Writers Series a couple years ago. So I wrote a thing about the three-part structure of the Virtute, the Cat series. My own journey through alcoholism and also my own transition and like leaving home and all this stuff. And I was reading it and like during a lot, I was reading on Zoom to a bunch of people in Vancouver. And I was like, I just started crying on the Zoom reading it. Cause it's just like.
That series is unbelievable. I found the line, which says, and disassembles my despair. It never took me anywhere. It never once bought me a drink. I also think, an Elegy for Rump Worsley always got me, like the spoken word piece. Thing about the way that we lionize sports heroes, that like put their body on the line for like our like enjoyment in a way that always got me. And then I always got stuck on the last line of Relative Surplus Value. Which is, so what I'm trying to say, I mean, what I'm asking is, I know we haven't talked in a while, but could you come get me? I thought it was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
He really ends songs phenomenally.
I like how we just have basically moved into like, now I'm just like, so we're starting a Weaker Thans podcast. We've agreed to what we're starting
talking about the Weaker Thans. We're just going to hear a bunch of lyrics we like.
In your dream Weaker Thans comp, this is my last unplanned question, and then I will let you go because I'm sure you have children and a whole life to attend to, and I have cats to feed. We have very different priorities. But in your dream Weaker Thans comp, do you have bands that you would like to be on it and songs you would like to see covered?
I would love to let anybody pick the song that they want, right? I think that's pretty important, is you do the song that matters the most to you.
Yeah.
Slaughter Beach Dog would be really high up on my list of people to do a Weaker Thans cover. Mm-hmm. Who else would I want? Runner would be amazing.
Pup has done at least one before.
Pup would do an amazing one. Pool Kids would probably do a really cool cover.
Oh, yeah, they would. Yeah.
Fun to see what Pool Kids could do. I would actually love to get people from like different genres, like what would happen if like Gel covered the Weaker Thans?
I can't wait to find out.
But yeah, I think the more important than like who I want is who wants to.
Sure.
Right. Like finding people that really, truly love it and then deciding to cover it, I think is like, would be very cool. Obviously having Craig do a song would be awesome. Or having the Holds that he do it. Like, I think, one of my favorite covers, I've been trying to think of my favorite covers recently because I've been stuck on the To Bring Samia Up Again, her cover of Desperado, which is like hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah.
But the Weaker Thans doing Atlantic City, the Holds that he doing Atlantic City with the horn line is picture perfect. And like hard to find. I don't think it's on like streaming services. It was a part of a comp.
Yeah. It's funny because I wrote a thing for my newsletter the other day about Justin Towns Earl, because there's an old cover of him doing Atlantic City for the Onion AV Club, that when they used to have that video series
Oh yeah, like the undercover or under
the So there was like, I had this, I was watching this video of him sort of on repeat as I was like finishing, I just finished writing a book about called The Dad Rock That Made Me a Woman. So I'm like, been writing a lot about dad rock. And then I was like watching this Justin Towns Earl video. I got very sad thinking about Justin Towns Earl and his relationship to his dad and his cover of Atlantic City. And then a cover of Graceland that he does too. And just like the way that like a song sort of changes in the voice of someone that's like, this is a personal thing for me. And I interpret the song a little bit differently. Like I always love when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a good cover can just like totally reframe an already amazing song. That's one of the coolest things.
This is something else I was to bring it all back for to you for one last time before I said I'm going to let you go 1,000 times. But on the first Aaron West album, you cover Going to Georgia, right? If I'm remembering correctly. Is it interesting to do a cover when sort of not the artifice, but like when the idea behind the record is you are embodying this character of Aaron West? And is it Aaron West? Is it Aaron covering the Mountain Goats or is it you?
It is Aaron, and the headcanon for this, like the thing that I've never put on paper, but that I believe. So the really like logistical reason for it is that the label told me it has to be 10 songs, but it can be a cover because I had only written 9 songs. And they said like, in order for it to work out, like with the royalty structure and how they get money from iTunes at the time or whatever, it has to be 10. So I was like, okay, I'll do a cover. And in my, again, in the headcanon of this, the way that I always saw it was that in Running Scared, when Aaron is driving the car kind of directionlessly and like running from his problems, I imagine him hearing Going to Georgia on the radio and that being like the impetus to go south. And so that's why that cover's on there.
Love it. That was the last of my unplanned questions that I did not send ahead of time to prepare you
for. Happy to have done them all.
Thank you so much. Where can people find you on the internet? Where's the best place to
if you're looking for West stuff, the website's aaronwestintheroaring20s.com. The Instagram is This Is Aaron West. I think that we still have a Twitter, but I don't think that anyone's logged into it for a long time. So I would say stick to Instagram if you're looking. And then, if you're looking for me, again, on Instagram, it's, I got to get off of the Mountain Goats. It's Broom People, which is the Mountain Goats song.
Yeah.
I started it. Our friends were in a band called Set Your Goals, and they were touring Mexico. And I was like, ooh, I want to see the pictures, but they're only on this new app called Instagram. So I'll just make a name so that I can see the pictures. And it's been like 12 years.
And you're locked in now. You can't change.
Yeah. Those are the best places to find me. We have this like kind of collective pseudo label called Loneliest Place on Earth, and that is where like all of my projects live. So The Wonder Years, my solo album, Aaron West, and then also the other guys from Wonder Years do there's a metal band called Skull Presser, and like a cool like Engine Downy mathy indie band called Why Bother, and Matt's solo stuff, and a bunch of stuff at lonelyestplaceonearth.com or The Loneliest Place on Earth YouTube.
Well, that'll all be linked in the show notes when I write them.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for wanting to do this and for making time and letting me ask you questions that had nothing to do with anything.
Always. One of these days we're going to hang out in the real world.
I very much look forward to it. I can't wait. One of these days I will leave the house.
I'll see you then.
I'll see you then.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.